Radio Prague News.
The Lower House of Parliament has ratified a Czech-Slovak treaty on mutual protection of airspace. The 2018 draft budget proposal should be approved by the end of September, and residents of Prague have greater projected longevity than people living in other parts of the Czech Republic. The Lower House of Parliament on Thursday ratified a Czech-Slovak treaty on mutual protection of airspace. The Czech and Slovak defense ministers Martin Stropnický and Peter Gajdoš signed the treaty in February after it was approved by the Slovak and Czech governments. Under the treaty, if one of the countries is unable to protect its airspace, the other can assist it. It also allows pilots to interfere on the territory of the other country, even with weapons, in case it is necessary. The 2018 draft budget proposal should be approved by the end of September, despite the coalition's ongoing dispute over wage hikes for public sector employees, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said on Thursday after meeting with Finance Minister Ivan Pilný. The coalition is set to hold talks on the issue on Monday. Prime Minister Sobotka repeated that he supported the unions and agreed with a 10% hike for public sector employees and 15% hike for teachers starting November 2017. The State Environmental Fund has launched the second round of its project called Dešťovka, a water tank rebates program intended to boost a policy of rainwater harvesting and utilization. The Ministry of Environment on Thursday earmarked 240 million crowns to be used in subsidies for homeowners willing to install rainwater tanks to be used for watering gardens, flushing toilets and other household needs instead of drawing on public supplies. One household can receive up to 105,000 crowns in subsidies. The first round of the program, which was launched in May, proved to be extremely successful, with people applying for the subsidies amounting to 110 million crowns within the first 28 hours. The reconstruction of Prague's Veletržní palace, the home of the Czech National Gallery's modern art collection, is essential for the future of the institution, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said on Thursday during a visit to the premises. The current head of the National Gallery, Jiří Fajt, plans to announce an international architectural competition for the renovation of the 1920s building. According to the Prime Minister, the reconstruction should be one of the main priorities of a new investment program of the Ministry of Culture, which should be approved by his government. Residents of Prague have greater projected longevity than people living in other parts of the Czech Republic, with women in the capital expected to live to 82.7 years and men to 78 years on average. The figures are projected for babies born in 2015 and 2016 and come from official government data quoted by Czech television. Babies born in the Ústí nad Labem region have the lowest life expectancy, with women projected to live to 79.5 years on average and men 74 years. While Prague enjoys high employment and a relatively high level of social services, Ústí nad Labem suffers from poor air quality and relatively high numbers of people with low living standards. The Czech Republic saw one of the warmest summers since records began back in 1775, the Czech Hydrometeorological Institute reported on its website on Thursday. The oldest Czech meteorological station at Prague's Klementinum recorded an average temperature of 21.7 degrees Celsius, which places this summer on the sixth spot in a total of 243 measurements. The summer of 2003 remains the hottest in history, with an average temperature reaching 22.4 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, Prague says a top EU court verdict won't change the Czech position on migrant quotas. Leading Czech sculptor Krzysztof Kintera discusses his colourful new show in Prague. And later we meet UK artist Joe Machine. He's a man with a fascinating life story. All that's coming up in today's programme. The European Court of Justice has dismissed Slovakia and Hungary's legal challenge to the system of mandatory migrant quotas devised by the European Commission as a means of dealing with the migrant crisis. The Czech Republic, which is also one of the countries rejecting the forced distribution of migrants, says the ruling will make no difference to its position. Daniela Lazareva reports.
The ruling of the EU's highest court on the mandatory redistribution of migrants around the EU sparked another heated exchange between the European Commission and the countries against which it has launched infringement proceedings over their failure to comply with the EU's solidarity mechanism. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orbán called the decision rape of European law and values. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico said nobody could force Slovakia to take a step it considered to be wrong. And Poland and the Czech Republic noted that the verdict would not change their policy on migrants. In response to a warning from the European Commissioner for Migrants, Dimitris Avramopoulos, for the said states to meet their obligations and implement EU solidarity, or else the European Commission would take them to court, Czech officials pointed out that unlike Hungary and Slovakia, they had not challenged the mandatory quota system as such, but had repeatedly stated that the system was simply not working. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek.
Our
objections to this mechanism are based on the argument that it doesn't work in practice, and we want to see it revised. We don't approve of the fact that we have this mechanism in the EU, where countries are bound to go through the motions of providing data and numbers, when in reality it's clear the requirements can't be met.
The Czech Republic, which has taken in only around 12 refugees of the close to 2,700 allotted to it under the European Commission's mechanism, recently argued that Italy and Greece, from which it was to take in migrants, had not enabled it to carry out the detailed background investigation checks on the refugees in question. According to the Czech Interior Ministry, the Italian and Greek authorities permitted only the most basic questions to be posed to refugees earmarked for relocation, and eventually ceased communicating altogether. The conditions under which the system was to operate are simply not being met, and the present debate in Europe on this matter shows that our reservations are justified, Minister Zaorálek said. Meanwhile, Czech President Miloš Zeman, known for his fiery anti-migrant rhetoric, said at a public gathering that the country should not give way to EU pressure.
If the worst comes to the worst, then it will be better to forego EU subsidies than open the door to migrants. And that report is by my colleague Daniela Lazareva. Now, a pyramid comprising real washing machines whirs, trees with globe heads have shaking fits, and a huge jukebox allows visitors to shape the ambience. All this and much more features in a major new and free exhibition by the top Czech sculptor Krzysztof Kintera at Prague's Galleria Rudolfinum. I caught up with the artist just ahead of the opening of the show, which is entitled Nervous Trees. How important is it for you that the exhibition be interactive? Because you kind of can't even walk through the exhibition without touching parts of it.
Well, of course, I like when the people are the part of the game. They go through the exhibition and they don't feel as just a viewer without being a part of it. And I think the best part in this exhibition, in that sense, is a part of public jukebox where the person who will decide which track or sound will be played for another 2 or 3 minutes. He's also basically a switching moment. It's his decision what kind of sound we will be hearing all. And he takes also the responsibility for the atmosphere in the room. And I like it pretty much. And then also being in the laboratory of Postnaturalia, I think you are losing the feeling that you are in the gallery. You feel more like visiting a studio of the artist.
And are you not concerned that people may take something from your studio and put, because there's so many small items around that people could, you know, think this will be nice at home?
Yes, of course, this will happen. People are people, that means they are stealing stuff. But these ones, which are being from collectors, they are properly screwed, so you can't easily take it.
Some parts of the Rudolfinum you wouldn't even recognize. It's so changed by you. Why did you want to kind of impact the gallery, this kind of classic building here, so much?
Because from the point of view of a live artist not coming from abroad, you know, because these guys, big names like Chapman Brothers or Louis Bourgeois or other artists, they don't feel the necessity to comment on where they are exhibiting, because for them it's a show in Prague and it's okay, it's fine. But for domestic guy, I know pretty much where I am. It's a very classical building, and of course it is in contrast of the lifestyle I am living. That means you have to put this question on the table, like, what the hell are you going to do in this building? And that leads you immediately to a wish and will to turn things slightly upside down. And also, for me, finally, it was very nice to recognize that for quite a lot of objects, the contrast works well. For instance, if you are showing earthquake machine made of 80 washing machines, if you exhibit that in for instance some industrial architecture, it wouldn't be probably that much nice. So the contrast works for the pieces.
Like previous exhibitions of yours that I've seen, it's very colorful, it's noisy, it's thought-provoking, but in a kind of entertaining way. It's very fun to experience. How much fun is it for you producing all this stuff?
It's my life, and fortunately, it's a lot of fun. And I must also add that it's beyond the capacity of one single artist, and we work most of the time in a small collective. And I'm very proud of being with my friends, and we have usually a lot of fun during the process of doing it.
And alongside the tower of washing machines and the other big pieces, you have small works which you call kresby or drawings, which are kind of like posters. What's the idea behind those?
I'm pleased that you are calling it posters. It's for the first time I'm hearing this point of view, and they are sort of posters by the scale that I'm using, which is similar to a scale of the poster, but also by titles which I recently started to write directly on the surface of the drawing. Before I was not doing it. Usually the title was from the backside of the drawing. And they are very important for me because they are very instant. In contrary to doing complicated technical sculptures, when you are devoted to become a kind of worker, engineer, whatever, and it takes a lot of time to do it. And to do the drawing, this kind of drawing, it takes sometimes minutes. And it's a big relief. And for me, it's keeping me to be an artist, not just a worker.
That was Christoph Kintera. His exhibition, which once again is free, is well worth visiting, and it runs at the Rudolfinum Gallery until the end of November. Now, in the final part of our show today, we stick with the visual arts as Daniela Lazareva meets the UK artist Joe Machine.
British Stuckist artist Joe Machine is best known for his raw paintings depicting violence, sex and crime, all images drawing on his childhood. However, his exhibition in Prague also shows visitors the long journey he has travelled to find self-understanding and inner peace. Shortly after the opening of the exhibition, From the Gutter to the Stars, I spoke with Joe Machine about his life, his painting and how much has changed over the years.
I am an artist who very much paints from my life experiences and drawing on my own life experiences. Some of those from the earlier parts of my life have been very dark. I have a very specific style which is very easy to recognise, instantly recognisable. I've tried to move out of certain periods of my life through exploring in paint what my life has meant to me through the crime that I've been involved in, moving through this as a way of exploring my life into different areas of my life to study nature and religion all through depicting these things in terms of paint. So yes,
it called From the Gutter to the Skies.
From the Gutter to the Stars. Yes, indeed. Yes, it is basically intended to be a spiritual evolution. The stars, representative of, I suppose, you know, a heightened state for me in this sense. Whereas the paintings of the impulses and the things that I took part in years ago represent a more lower base state, whereas now I am trying to work with a more heightened state and a more spiritually evolved and physically and mentally evolved sort of state through my work.
A lot of these paintings are sex, crime, violence, things that you witnessed as a child. Are they as you see them today, or is it as you saw all this as a boy?
Yeah, I mean, I still have the same fears of the violence. I still have the bad dreams, and I still have the same fears of the things that I saw as a child. So, yes, looking at the paintings, I do still feel a very similar way. Of course, years have gone by. Those years have given me, have provided me with a safe space where I was living with them to begin with. When I was making drawings, those drawings became paintings. That was a real period of fear to me. So now I have moved through to, I think, a more holistic area. Although I'm still afraid of the things that happened to me, and looking at certain parts of his imagery does produce a very similar response, I have a greater overview of them now, and I understand that although maybe they weren't maybe necessary, that was the material that I had to work with in life. I've tried to evolve past it. They were just lessons, as far as I'm concerned, lessons that I've had to learn as a person and as a man.
You said that, in a way, they're all auto-portraits, and yes, that basically drawing them was a therapeutical process for you. And at one point you said that some of the paintings portrayed, that they expressed your fear of actually having become this kind of person. Yes. Have they helped you to prevent that?
Yes, definitely, because for me, becoming like the people that I feared as a child was the greatest defeat of all. It was an awful period of my life, a dreadful period. I have had to learn through my own experiences to try to move past these things, to try and be more civilized.
When did you realize that you needed to paint to get all this out of your system?
From a very early age, because there was no help. There was no help. I had parents. I came from a violent background. I had parents, but both of my parents were from... my father now is 83 years old, so he was from a different group of people that... they didn't see violence and exposure to violence as a problem. My father was a violent man. His father was a violent man. His father before him was a violent man. They're all violent men. I was not like this as a child. It's very, very different for me. I was a very extremely sensitive child, so this was a huge problem for me.
Basically, your art helped you to escape.
Yes.
But you had no schooling of any kind. How did you start drawing?
I had a very different schooling. I was expelled from school at an early age, fairly early age. I was about 6 years old, so I was put into different schools. I always used art from a very early age through drawings to try and bring out whatever fear I had. It was the only way, because there was no other help. I had no one else to talk to. There was no one really that I could deal with. I think social services were very good in that area at that particular time. I think if it had been now, things would maybe have been very different. But there was no help for me. I really had myself to rely upon in that sense. And drawing and painting was all that I had. It was my only other way. It hasn't always been that way, because I was in psychotherapy when I came out of prison for 12 years to work with my problems as well.
And you kept drawing, basically,
always,
from the days when you were a child.
Yes. Yes. Yes, drawing and painting has been the one constant in my life, and I continue to do it because I was also writing a lot as well, but mainly drawing and painting. It was the only way that I had of putting sense to the things that were happening in my life.
The paintings have changed over the years because some of your paintings now are very optimistic, really, yes. Sort of promise of the future.
Yes.
But some of them are spiritual, which probably also helped you to heal.
Yes.
But you are still painting the horrors of your childhood. Does that mean that's still deep inside you?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's all part of a whole. I can't not acknowledge what happened to me because it's all part of the journey. It's all part of a whole. As Jung said, I'd rather be whole than good. I think goodness comes when you acknowledge what is within you is a problem and is bad, and I've had to do that. Then goodness comes once you've made that acknowledgement and you understand what the problems were, you've worked through them. Rather than me setting out to be good, there was no moment, for example, of seeing the light. There was no, one specific religious experience. There was nothing, no spiritual experience, nothing really like that. It happened rather over a long period of time, after many mistakes, working with things and doing things that way.
On the other hand, some of these paintings, or many of these paintings, the violent ones, are of people you know, the prostitutes, the sailors. Do they not haunt you? Do they not perpetuate things and keep it alive in you?
Yes, they do, but I don't let those things assume any more space in my mind than need be. I think one time it did, it engulfed me. I was engulfed by it, and that's why I went into crime and became that which I feared most, I think. And I've had to learn over the years that I just don't do anything that doesn't work. I am all about common sense. If it's not common sense, then I don't do it. So I've had to learn common sense aspects to life, and it's been a very, very difficult process, but certainly worthwhile.
And you taught yourself to paint, basically?
Yes, I have no formal art training. I taught myself to draw, taught myself to paint. It's just something that seemed to come naturally to me. I developed a style. I wasn't aware of anyone else's artwork for many years. And even as a painter now, there are very, very few artists that I actually look at. I very rarely go to art exhibitions. I'm fairly secluded on my own. That's always been my way. I work with whatever comes up, whether it be impulses which are drawn from my past, whether it's a love that I feel for my children, whether it's my relationship with God. I work with whatever comes up in my life.
And you're inspired by dreams as well?
Dreams, yes. Dreams, dream symbolism, images which are drawn from meditation, prayer. Whatever comes up for me, yes.
You co-founded Stuckism.
I didn't co-found it, but I was one of that was Billy Childish and Charles Thompson. I was one of the original 13 members in England, yes.
Can you explain in what way it's different? In what way you feel that your work is different from other paintings, art paintings?
Yeah, I think my work is very different because I have a very, very different past to the vast majority of painters, and I was primarily a self-confrontational artist for the first part of my life, wouldn't draw or paint anything that didn't come directly from my life. I have taught myself a specific style which the world-renowned art critic Edward Lucy Smith has said is instantly recognisable. So I think that is something which has helped me a great deal over the past. Having this background and I'm not just someone who is, oh look, he's an ex-criminal. I'm someone that's worked with my past in order to overcome it and to deal with it. And I think this, I don't know, maybe it's a rare thing, maybe it isn't. All I can say is what has worked for me. I've used my experiences to create paintings drawn from my life and evolve out of the situation that was causing me problems, and now to make paintings of what is in my life now. I make paintings of God because God is in my life. I make paintings of nature because nature is all around me where I live, for what is most important to me in life.
These paintings are part of your life. They're part of your past. They are your hope.
Yes.
They are really very much a part of you. Is it difficult to sell them?
Surprisingly, no. And the paintings which I've sold a lot of have been those which are drawn from my earlier life. The paintings of crime, sex, violence. I've sold a lot of those over the years. And to some people that I suppose it's looking at other people maybe in a way that I shouldn't and thinking, why do you want this painting? I know what they mean to me, but some very interesting people have bought my paintings, people that I would never have thought would have gone for the sort of imagery that I depict. So it's very interesting.
That's what I wanted to ask, because some of these paintings are very raw. They're brutal. You see blood on them and sex and violence. And I was wondering who would buy them, whether they would hang in someone's living room or even a company or, you know. Why do these people buy them, do you think? Is it because they also evoke something in themselves?
Yes, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think this is the case with some people. For some people that have bought my paintings, they want to have something which is real, which is drawn from someone's life, to experience an element of danger without actually experiencing the danger themselves. So, I mean, there are many artists, even some of those that are involved with Stuckism, they have painted maybe unpleasant images, but for many of them, never ever been involved in them. They have no understanding of gang culture, no understanding of drug culture, no understanding of crime, no real understanding, only what comes from television and walking around in the streets day by day. And I'm not saying everyone should live like this, but that's what makes me very, very different, is I have a street view and a very street feeling, street experience about what happens, for example, when a man's face gets cut. I know because I saw it when I was 5 years old. When someone receives a glass bottle in their eye or something like this, when someone's throat gets cut, when someone's stabbed. My background as well sells the paintings, knowing that I have had this background, knowing my experiences and the paintings are drawn from my experiences has helped sell the paintings again and again and again and again. It's because people want something which is not just someone sitting somewhere, and I'm not trying to play down anyone else's art or the things that they do, but it's not someone sitting in a room painting pretty pictures. Not all art is about pretty pictures. It must, for me, must show the spirit and spiritual evolution, and you must have something to evolve from.
What has made you happiest about the things that people have said in response to the feedback that you've got to your paintings? Is it that you basically need to paint these paintings and you don't really care what people think, or do you actually want them to help people in some way? How is it?
I think that when I was initially involved with Stuckism, and even before then, I didn't care a damn for what people thought about me or my work. I just didn't care. I think I had that kind of attitude, and I had that attitude for many years, but I have come to care more about what people think about it, because now I am not alone. I know I'm part of a wider tradition, and not just amongst painters. This is not just about me. There is a wider tradition here. I am part of, a tradition of people who try to evolve and maybe evolve the hard way. This is what I have done, or at least attempted to do. So, of course, it is very, very nice when people recognise what you are doing and why you are doing it, and they get what you are trying to do. They understand the journey, and you're able to say something about the journey, and they can connect with you on that level. Whether they, appreciate everything or agree with everything, well, it's a different matter. But I think that many people now who have seen my work, they understand what it is that I'm trying to say, where I'm coming from. And I think that is what's important to me, is connecting with people and having that connection with the people that view the paintings. For me, that's everything.
That was Joe Machine, and that's all we have time for on Radio Prague today. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.